That song's so awesome. If you're ever in a bummer mood, slap that on a couple thousand times.
I want that played at my funeral for the record.
All right. Well, it's on the record.
All right.
That's official. Thanks for joining us, everybody. This is the Film Drunk Frotcast. My name is Ben. We got the whole crew and plus a special guest this week. Super blogger Vince is in the house.
Yes, I am.
NFL Hall of Famer Brendan's in the house.
R.I.P. Buster, who kept me out of handcuffs.
And live from Vince's computer is Brett.
I'm the special guest.
No, you're a regular.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah, after all this time, you finally made it to be a regular.
Damn it.
Pretty soon we'll get on Frotcast favorite Matt Ufford, king of the sports world. Is he officially king?
I think so.
Yeah.
He's at least like a crown prince.
Yeah. He's been knighted.
Yeah.
By the internet as prince of sports. He's a vlogger now.
A vlogger.
That's sort of your dream, right?
Well, here's the thing. What I always tell myself is Spanish people, they can't even tell the difference between blogger and vlogger. So what's it to me, you know? I'm just trying to live like a Spaniard.
Fair point.
Right.
But it is sort of your dream to not write a lot and just have a camera in your face and talk.
Mm.
No?
Eh.
It's weird looking. He's a weird looking guy.
I think that would have its own challenges.
Well, like remembering what time your flight is to go to L.A.?
There's that. Yeah, that's one challenge. Also, what do you do with your hands? That's the other challenge.
So many tough decisions when there's a camera. You need mittens on your hands or something.
Right.
Maybe oven mitts.
Well,
just hold two beers.
That's a great idea. Like a Edward 40 hands sort of thing.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Every time I did the green screen show, they'd be like, oh, do more with your hands, like gesture and stuff. And I'm like, that's stupid. It doesn't look right. It doesn't make any sense. And then that was right around the time Tosh started. And Tosh has got his hands just in his, he's just got his hands in his pockets, in his belt loops. And I'm like, that looks way more normal. Like, that seems like what a normal person would do when they talk to the camera.
No, you're supposed to flail your hands around.
That's what they wanted.
Like there's a fire.
They wanted you to, flail around, gesture, point at the thing that you don't know is there yet.
Yeah, but in space it's there.
Right.
In the magic of editing.
It's in the cloud.
Yeah.
You should have gotten a couple foam fingers.
Right.
That'd be good, too. Or I always like the Hulk hands that can hold a beer.
Oh, yeah.
You know
like
what I'm
a
talking
big, about? Yeah, like a big... Yeah, I've seen those.
Yeah. One of my friends has an orange one for the Giants games.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big Hulk hand, but it's got a place to hold a can of or bottle of beer.
Yeah, that's smart.
It's very strange those became as popular as they did.
Clearly, you're not a fan of the Incredible Hulk, who is one of the strongest creatures that's ever been created.
Well, see, I started to write, since I was writing my own segments, I started to write it so that I would have a prop all the time or, I'd be doing something. It would be more interesting than just me reading off a thing. But then by that point, the show had already basically been canceled.
Has it actually been canceled or did they just tell you not to come back? Vince, been canceled.
Hey, the Jesse Thorne and Jordan Morris told me that it was canceled also. So unless they're in on it, I don't know.
It's a big conspiracy to nicely get you off the show.
Jesse's just somewhere wearing his plaid suits, just counting my money.
Yeah. Getting your residuals.
Mm-hmm.
It's already into syndication.
Right.
Yeah.
But my last one, I wrote a Hunter S. Thompson thing where I dressed up as Hunter S. Thompson. I think I was eating pie with a knife, a deer knife at one point. I thought that was my strongest piece, but that was the one.
Well,
that
then
never...
you knew what to do with your hands. You put the knife into the pie,
exactly,
and then the knife with the pie towards your mouth.
Yeah, and one hand washes the other.
Sort of hug the front of the pie. Yeah, the arm around.
Two hands are in use.
Yeah,
so correct.
There's no question of where to flail them.
Yeah.
Those were the days.
What would have been, Ben? What would have been?
We should be going on Grid season 5 by now.
I know.
Well, I should have the first 4 on DVD.
We've got a fun show, as we said. Matt Ufford going to be joining us soon. We'll talk some sports probably, whatever else is on his mind. We got some awesome listener emails we'll get to, and there's some online feuds. But I think we should probably start off with a RIP Paul Walker.
RIP.
It is sad.
Yeah, well, you know, should we wait for Matt? Because I know Matt's
got... Oh, you want to get Matt's take?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's got some hot...
They used to date.
...death takes.
Oh, is he big on the death?
Yeah, he's
celebrity
just,
death scene?
Right. I mean, otherwise, it's just Brett talking about it. And...
Well, Brett, I have opinions, but they're not funny.
They're just bleak.
Yeah.
Do they involve the fact that whether it's a car crash or some other means, we're all dead anyway?
I might have touched on that.
Okay. Oh, we did have some poop transplant news, if you want to get into that.
We never got to, it was probably a month ago, we got inundated with emails and tweets about the poop pills.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which involved somehow getting fecal matter into swallowable pills. I have that.
Yeah, it's from an Atlantic.
You got prescription for poop pills?
No, I didn't. But I did get the Atlantic article where he's talking about the pill-making process.
Well,
which is
to purists, there's really only one way to do it.
That's true. Are you a purist, Brendan? Yes. You're like only on vinyl.
Yeah.
Like if it's real poop or nothing.
It's real poop or nothing.
Yeah.
Real
analog poop, butt stuff.
Real. Well, poop, this isn't through a beer bong into your butt.
Without any enhancements, without any sort of extracurricular tools.
Nope.
All right. So the Atlantic wrote an article about poop pills.
They did. I picked out some of the best quotes from that. Now, if you're new to the Frogcast, this is, I mean, you must have missed all of them up to this one.
First of all, if you don't know about poop transplants, you need to get with science because it's, yeah. I mean, it's won all of the Nobel Prizes as well as all the Pulitzer Prizes.
If you have a problem with C. diff in your intestines, then you better get on the poop transplant.
Well, let Brendan
check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Right.
Is really all I have to say about
that. Is that your diagnosis when people come into you?
Yeah.
Because on the side, you have a poop transplant consultancy now, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, they do say it's like one of the most,
spoiler alert, everyone needs a poop transplant.
Just Brendan with a fake doctor's.
One of those leather bands with the shiny metal disc.
I was just thinking that.
What the hell is that thing?
You know what this person needs is a poop transplant.
What is that shiny metal disc on the old-timey doctors? Is there a light in there?
No, I think it's just so that it reflects the light. I don't know how effective
is that
is because it's like thrice reflected light, you know, because it would go off their butt into the metal disc,
back to your eye.
Yeah. Back to your eye, yeah.
I'm pretty sure I just sprained my ankle. Well, poop transplant for you.
Yep. He's got a fake mustache. Uh-huh. That sounds like a fake mustache, fake poop to me. Okay, so yeah, used to treat C. diff.
90% recovery rate.
Very, very high recovery rate. Everyone talks about what a miracle cure it is. So here's some of the quotes. Despite his years in medicine, Hirsch seems perpetually shocked by how poop, the archetypal odious substance, can be so curative. Shit's inherent nastiness is, it seems, partly what's been holding it back from curing countless C. diff patients by now. I mean, it's really impressive how disgusting shit is, he said. Our experience of stool is this brief 6-inch flight from rectum to water. But really, it's not that it smells bad. It's that the bad smell is deep. There's a profundity. If you were describing a wine, it would be woody notes with a depth of pestilence underneath it. At the same time, though, shit is a great drug.
Is this for real?
Yeah, this is for real. This is the Atlantic. They get deep.
Brendan,
yeah.
Poop's a hell of a drug.
Yeah, it is.
Have you ever dried out some poop, rolled that up and smoked it? Man, you get high.
Just put it straight in my veins.
That'll
make you see God, muchacho.
You ever watched Apocalypse Now? On poop. And then he gets into the pill-making process. The poop is tested for yet another panel of patents. This is the Hirsch is the guy that developed the pill. So instead of
the purest way.
Instead of doing the old-fashioned, like, poop enema, they go with the pill now.
This man must die.
He's fighting against everything that you've stood for all this time.
I know.
He's made a powerful enemy today.
By the way, I mean, do you ever take fish oil?
Yeah.
And if you don't eat it at the same time as a meal, you're burping up fishy taste the rest of the day?
Mm-hmm.
Just think about that for a second.
sit on that.
Yeah. Let that marinate.
poop burps?
Yeah. Just burping up doo-doo all afternoon.
Here's how they make the pills. The poop is tested for yet another panel of pathogens, and if it's clear, it gets sent to the pill-making process. First, a 50-gram lump of poop is put in a blender with a saline solution and pulsed until it's homogeneous. You basically get a shit shake, Honig said. It contains bacteria, undigested fibers from your food, and the bacteria's waste. The shake gets passed through filters.
Whoa, that is two levels of poop.
Yeah.
Just so you know. That is at least two levels.
We're going to get more.
Whoa.
The shake gets passed through filters of different sizes that remove the larger pieces. What remains gets poured into a tube and nested inside a white, printer-sized centrifuge. The gravitational pull causes the material inside to separate into three layers. On the bottom, a dense pellet that consists of
corn.
they get a special sieve for that.
Well, I guess that comes out in the first filter.
I mean, the second filter, depending on how large the kernels are. I mean, maybe if you're eating hominy, like eating a lot of pozole, that doesn't come out right away.
That's second filter corn. Right.
That's second filter corn. On the bottom, a dense pellet that consists of undigested fiber, and on top, a liquid consisting of saline and the waste products of the fecal bacteria. In the middle lies what Hirsch and Honig are after, a dense light brown paste about the consistency of smooth peanut butter made up of fecal bacteria itself. At that point, it's not offensive, Honig said. When you get rid of the waste products of the bacteria, it doesn't smell as bad. Still, for good measure, the bacterial layer gets covered up by multiple layers of gelatin capsules. The final one is as golden-hued and has a light citrus taste. So when they swallow shit, Hirsch says, all they get is a sense of the orchids of Florida in the back of their mouth.
What about their stomach? That's where the poop digests.
Yeah, it's they described it as like a Russian nesting doll where they just have a bunch of like a shit-filled pellet inside of like a bunch of other pellets.
So is it supposed to get to your intestines before it becomes... So in theory, you shouldn't totally be burping up doo-doo all day?
Preferably. You might be farting out other people's doo-doo.
Okay, well, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's acceptable.
But like, you know how you can... You smell,
I think I could get into that.
But you know how you smell your own farts and you kind of enjoy it? Whereas other people's farts are disgusting. Yeah. Like, would you know if you farted and after eating one of those poop pills?
That's the whole idea. Is that you change the stink of your fart?
Would you have somebody else's farts coming out of your butt and suddenly they're all stinky to you?
Yeah. What if you had the poop from a serial killer?
That'd be like your butt.
Just be poop and knives.
Yeah.
Zodiac signs.
Well, your whole butt—it's like be a betrayal if your own poop suddenly started smelling bad to you.
I've thought it'd be helpful to be incepted to think all farts were your own.
Mm.
When you think about it,
can they do that through hypnosis?
All your poop is just smaller animals' poop.
Hmm. Nah.
Depends on what you eat.
No. That's what they're saying. Once they separate the little bacteria poops, your poop doesn't stink. You've just got like a whole zoo of animals pooping inside of you, and then you poop that out. It's like a gestalt poop.
Like a fractal geometry.
I'm still like, so it's, oh yeah, that's it's an interesting way to cure C. difficile.
Yeah. Eventually, Honig and Hirsch think they might be able to use gut microbes to predict which patients are likely to contract C. diff infections after taking antibiotics. Basically what happened, like they're talking about one guy where he was healthy and then he had some sort of infection and took antibiotics, and then he 3 days later, because it upsets the balance of bacteria in your intestines, and so you get this C. diff, which is like a bad bacteria.
Backlash.
Yeah, so then you can't have like a normal poop. And then they said it can lead to a toxic megacolon, which was like the best metal band.
Yeah. So I can't remember if I've told this story in the Frogcast before, but a formative time in my life was when I went camping with my friend Justin when we were in like seventh grade, and the campsite had one of those like wooden outhouses that just has like a 10-foot pit dug underneath it. So there's like
That pit's really more like 3,000 feet.
Yeah, right. There's eons of other people's shit, and there's rats crawling around on it. And we were only going for the weekend, and we were both scared to poop in there because we were like 13.
Yeah, that's the age when pooping in a public restroom is still just like, mentally a gigantic challenge.
Yeah, exactly. So we didn't go, and then like I think we let slip on the way back that neither of us had pooped all weekend. And his mom, who's from Rhode Island and has a great accent, starts yelling at us that like, you two are going to get fecal impaction. I don't know if I did the Rhode Island accent justice.
That's close enough.
But and then once we found out what that was, we thought that was hilarious. And then, like, total wrong move, she goes, do you know what happens after that? You get toxic megacolon.
Metal fingers.
We still laugh about toxic megacolon to this day.
Eventually, Honig and Hirsch think they might be able to use gut microbes to predict which patients are likely to contract C. diff infections after taking antibiotics. Or, even further in the future, they might be able to select for, say, a vegan or gluten-free donor based on the symptoms of the individual patient. Maybe we could find some Buddhist monastery where we don't really, where they have the perfect diet, Hirsch said. Maybe we'd have this holy shit line. We don't really know right now, though.
That's what Brendan always goes out in search of, the perfect poop.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, there's going to be
looking.
Designer poop transplants. That's the future.
If the choice is between eating a bunch of poop and then, or just shitting into a bag for the rest of my life, I would just be mouthful of poop in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah, getting it all over my face and on my bib with a picture of a turd on it.
Well, fortunately, I don't think you need to spoon it. I think the pills hopefully will cover up from actually need poop soup.
Right. There's not enough bibs with picture of the animal that you're eating on them. I mean, they only have that for like lobster and crab. Do they have that for anything else? Like,
house well, I think for rib? Other animals.
Ribs.
Oh, right. They got the pig. Okay. All right, Brett. You win this round.
I always get a kick out of Buddy's shirt that has two pigs fucking on it. Maybe Vince even told me about this, but two pigs fucking on the shirt, and underneath it says Making Bacon.
I haven't seen that one.
No, I've always enjoyed that.
Do you wish you thought of that one?
Me? I'm not as big on the puns or the irony, so no, I'm all right, but I do. It's a funny mental image. Beep, beep, beep,
beep. Brendan, I heard you got locked in an elevator or trapped in an elevator today.
I did get trapped in an elevator. It was scary, man.
Was the devil there, like that Shyamalan?
No,
thing?
I was waiting for him to show up. No, all
just by yourself.
Did anybody see
yeah,
that?
I saw it. No. It's terrible.
Oh, you really? Saw it? I thought yeah. no one.
I thought it got like decent reviews.
I saw
didn't
it on HBO. No, it was stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. What was it about?
It was just like a devil was in the elevator and was like possessing people and killing them or something. And I think there was some stupid twist at the end. It was really bad.
Like really?
I bet it was the old lady.
Oh, God, no, I don't even remember. I watched it because the main girl in it is very attractive, so that's kind of
how I started
watching
it. Was she the devil? Was that the twist?
I think she was the devil. I think that might have been the twist, but I don't even remember. I mean,
it's
a
shitty twist.
It was so forgettable. Yeah, so I hit 3. I was on the third floor of the parking garage, and all of a sudden it goes up to 6.
What?
Oh.
Yeah.
And possessed.
And then it just doesn't open, and I press like every button, and nothing opens. So after like at least 45 seconds, I hit the emergency button and, it was like, and it's like, click. And I was like, hello. I was like, I'm stuck in the elevator. Hello.
Maybe that connects you to a different country.
I think it's a different or dimension,
parallel universe. Yeah. You're talking to alternate Brendan.
Then it just went down to the first floor and opened up, and it was like a Dominican guy.
Was he the one you were talking to?
Yeah, he was like. No, he's like just talking to the elevator, and I was like. No, I tried to go to 3 and I went to 6, and then some other guy's like, I need to go to 6, and the guy's like, get in there and press 3.
Everyone's a joker.
Yeah.
Oh, funny guy at the office.
I'm actually surprised elevators don't break down more often.
I was thinking, that was the first time I've ever been stuck in an elevator.
Yeah.
Ours is broken every fucking week.
In your apartment complex?
Yeah, well, it's not a complex, it's a building.
Well, yeah, whatever, same thing.
Yep.
What's the difference? Where do you draw the line?
Yeah, what is
complex is multiple buildings.
We're splitting.
You gotta have like a plaza.
Hmm. There's got to be an atrium, a foyer.
Yeah, there's got to at least be 2 buildings.
Some sort of fountain, at least.
Yeah, one would hope.
Okay.
If you're not living in the worst apartment complex.
Yeah, it's got to be a classy joint.
I like a water feature.
Should we talk about the 30 for 30 we all saw?
Sure.
Oh, man. So
what was it? It was called Big Shot.
Big Shot, yeah.
It was about the I actually never knew this story, probably because I'm not a very gigantic hockey fan.
Well, I followed hockey, and I would say I followed hockey most ardently during like the mid to late 90s. I still follow it tangentially, but I was most diehard like mid to late 90s, and I don't even really remember that story.
Basically, this Texas dude, came in saying he had a bunch of money to buy the New York Islanders, who are on Long Island, not in Manhattan. And turns out he didn't have that much money. That's the gist of the story.
And I mean, he's purely a bullshit artist. I mean, that's all it was. I mean,
total con artist.
And it wasn't even He wasn't a con artist in the sense of actually conning people out of their money. He was just completely full of shit. They said his net worth was like $200,000.
And what he was really – this is a time when fax machines were still in wide use and it wasn't internet stuff.
Yeah, it was like 1996.
Yeah, so it was just pre-wide use of internet. So he was able to fax forged documents, which turns out is a lot easier than like a PDF or something. Yeah.
Well, also I think it was in the days when – you could sort of, I mean, that was just before all the loans where you could just basically say what your income was and they would give you a loan.
Well, even that was part of the documentary is money was just sort of flying around.
Yeah.
So basically you walk into a bank and give them some forged documents and say, I want this much money. And they say, do you need it today? Cash? Like,
yeah.
Large bills, small bills? What would you like?
I like the part where like he would have payments due and it'd be like $17 million and he'd wire them like $17,000 and he'd be like,
dude, they $1,700.
Yeah, they screwed up the
really?
Decimal
are you,
point.
$17,000 is like way too much for him to have. He wired $1,700.
Are you guys sure? Recheck that the number there. You know what? I'm gonna have to get back to you.
I mean, it was kind of, I'm not gonna say ingenious, but he got to party and live pretty high on the hog for, you know.
It wasn't ingenious. It was just, I would say brazen. It was
right.
Like, he did not give a fuck.
Right.
And he actually, it was, the funny part was he came very close to pulling everything off because once he got his foot in the door with the discussions of it, I believe actually, one thing they really fucked up was they actually signed the deed. So he actually was the owner. Before the deal went through.
Before giving them all the money.
Yeah, before giving them the money. So he hadn't given them a fucking dime. And
can we pause? We got Matt on
Yeah.
It's a sports story. We might as well add him to the party. There he is.
How's it going?
Ahoy, hoy.
Hey.
Hi.
How you guys doing?
We're good. We were just talking about Big Shot, the 30 for 30, directed by that Entourage dude.
I did not see it because I chose not to waste half an hour of my life.
It's worth watching, but Kevin Connolly is a terrible narrator and a worse interviewer.
Yeah, I was just about to get to the story is so awesome, but what pisses me off is what a shitty job Kevin Connolly did.
He should not have been the narrator.
Right, or the director.
Or the interviewer.
Or had anything to do.
He shouldn't be working in any job where I have to see him ever.
I guess it was sort of an interesting case study in that the material was so good that the source material was so good that it's hard to go wrong. Like, it was such a good story.
Well, he had access.
Yeah, he had access. And it was such a good story that it's hard to fuck up. But he came very close. And I think the part where I, like, really lost my shit was this guy, I mean, he was a bullshit artist. It's clear that all he was a bullshit artist. That's all he could possibly do. And he talks about being on trial for basically lying and, like, you know, doing all this shit that's just, like, so – you have to be sort of a sociopath to think you can pull it off.
Well, and then he was not apologetic at all.
He was unapologetic. But the only time he showed any emotion, he goes – well, you know, once I went on trial, they dragged my parents into it. And he starts crying about them dragging his parents and, like, how it's unfair. And instead of him just being like, well, you just, you know, basically tried to rip a bunch of people off and lied to everybody, you know, lies upon lies upon lies. And you totally perpetrated this fraud and et cetera. He could say any variation of that kind of stuff. And he goes, yeah. Yeah, I hear you. Yeah,
I hear you. Great question,
well,
Kevin.
As Vinny Chase's sidekick for all those years, he's been through similar trials and tribulations.
He's used to being yes,
man. Another thing that struck me about that movie is the whole time I'm watching that guy, the main guy, and he's like he's bald as a cue ball, and he's got like the horseshoe of hair around
like
his
turtle
around his ears, and you know he's got these like old man suits. And then they're like, and blah, 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 31-year-old businessman. I'm like, fucking kidding me? That guy's my age? Like, yeah. That guy looks like he's my dad.
People looked older in the 90s.
He looked so old.
Yeah, he did.
He looked, hair and weight.
Yeah.
Have a lot.
Being fat and bald and glasses, and especially
and
the kind
adding,
of bald.
Yeah, and then adding wide lapels.
Right.
He was 90s, right. He was 90s bald
yeah.
With some Costanza glasses and wide lapels.
And that is an odd type of, like, the full professor
right.
Bald at 31. You know, I have friends that are losing hair, but no one is full-on Mr. Burns at 31.
Well, I have friends that are bald, but usually they shave their head.
Yeah, well, if they're like that, yeah, they would
or at least like have the good sense to do like the Bruce Willis like close cropped on the sides. Don't like try to grow out the sides.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, but maybe he was trying to look older to defraud everybody.
Yeah, that's true. That probably had an effect. Yeah. Another thing that that was funny to me about his Kevin Connolly's directing style was, I don't know if this is an East Coast thing, because it kind of strikes me as an East Coast thing. Whenever they're talking about sports, it's like, man, back in the 90s, everybody was into the Islanders. I was such a big Islanders fan. They just set the whole town on fire and blah, 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 blah. It's like, you were 10 and you liked the sports team. Holy shit, let me get you a medal.
No, I think that was more, I think that's more of a 30 for 30 thing.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of, well, but it kind of follows the template.
Kevin Connolly put himself in the documentary in the way that most people do not.
Like, here's a picture of me when I was 10 wearing an Islanders jersey. Yeah. Thanks. Cool. Good job, Kevin.
This is before I worked with Vinny
Chase. Also, not to mention, he tries to establish the success, which I get. And any, it doesn't matter what franchise it is. If you're in one of the major four sports and you win as many titles as the Islanders did in the 80s, you're going to be popular. Like,
yeah,
that's going to happen. But yeah, he definitely inserted himself where he didn't need to.
And don't get me wrong, I'm like a big proponent of, you know, putting yourself in there if you're there.
If you're interesting.
Yeah, but unless you're Kevin Connolly. And then it's like, all right.
But there's something, like you said, about being a kid. Like, especially if it's the local team. Yeah, no crap. You were a fan of the good local sports team. That's odd. That's weird, man. You thought they were all your heroes. That's weird. No one did that when they were 11 years old.
Brendan, you forgot your favorite part. You didn't mention your favorite part. Or was it your favorite
part? Oh, my favorite part. Well, all of our favorite parts.
He's chewing gum during the interviews.
chewed gum during the entire... So it was a one-on-one interview with Kevin Connolly. And I don't even remember the
dude's name.
John Spano, who's the fraudulent owner. And Kevin Connolly is openly smacking gum the whole interview. And then there's this scene that he's the director, and he still doesn't edit it out. It was an unnecessary shot of Kevin Connolly. And you can visibly see the gum.
Yeah, just with his mouth open. You just see a wad of gum.
You know, sometimes like you're chewing gum and you sort of put it towards the front of your mouth?
Yeah.
He did that during the interview, and they left that in the movie. I don't get it. I don't get it. That's when you're E, sometimes you don't have...
When you're on Entourage for however many fucking years that show's on the air, just the self-awareness goes out the window.
Yeah, I don't know why that's so frustrating to watch, but I definitely watched that documentary about the Hole drummer, and they're interviewing Courtney Love, and she was just eating cookies and just chewing with her mouth open, and I've never wanted to jump through a screen and strangle someone worse than that. Like, I mean, the fact that it was Courtney Love is one thing, and she's just, like, so just in your face with what a disgusting human being she is. Ugh.
To be fair, it's hard to get her to sit still. You need to give her cookies or something.
You need to feed her 10 cookies that you just, like, you watch her mash into a paste like a cow in front of your eyes.
Puts it in a syringe and tries to inject it into her veins.
Mr. Ufford.
Yes, sir.
What's new on that side of the world?
Oh, man. I'm just trying to get through the fantasy football season, because when that's over on December 23rd for me, I can go back to working less than like 65, 70-hour weeks.
So are you still doing your weekly live fantasy show?
Yes, sir. And I've got like a little like Tuesday edition for like guys you should pick up on the waiver wire. And then there's a Thursday show where it's all the guys that you should sit and start for the coming weekend. And that's always wrong. And, you know, so I just kind of like bathe in regret and and study statistical trends that don't pan out on Sundays. It's a really fulfilling life.
At least everybody's wrong, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everyone's selling snake oil. So what makes my snake oil better is that it's me and I'm all charming and shit.
Which, I mean, that's how snake oil gets sold.
Snake
oil is not sold on its effectiveness.
Well, you cut out the personality. You just got oil of a snake.
Yeah.
Well, and then you don't even have someone telling you why it's so good. You just have, you just have snake oil.
It's how towns get monorails, you know. You got to put them on the map.
Well, that's what Brooklyn's finally getting, a monorail, thanks to you, right?
Monorail.
You're like
metaphor.
Matt's like the version of me that always has a Simpsons metaphor for everything. Like, someone actually left a voicemail this week to chide me for. He's like, Vince, not everything needs to be related back to Chopped. And I was like, all right, that's fair criticism.
But is that true? Because I think in your mind, it probably does need to be related back to Chopped.
Well, sometimes it's just a handy metaphor.
It's very much like whatever whatever you came of age with, because I'm 35 and I spent like prime, like high school and college years, like watching Simpsons, like in the prime, in its prime on loop. And then I work with people who are a decade younger than me, and they have just like Family Guy references out the butt. And I'm just like, I look at them with disdain, like, ugh.
Yeah,
really?
Have you tried to drop a Seinfeld reference on any of them recently?
I was never that into Seinfeld. Like, I can recognize like how good Seinfeld was, but I was never like at the time I was not totally into the show.
Because I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I'm 32, and a lot of the folks I work with are like 23, 24. Mm-hmm. And I drop a Seinfeld reference, and they look at me like I got a dick growing out of my forehead.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's all right. Brennan, you and I can go back and have a life together in North Haverbrook or Ogdenville or something.
That's right. Maybe Shelbyville.
Yeah.
There are times when you drop a reference and people laugh, and you wonder if they got the reference or if they just think that you're really weird. Like, you know, when you're like talking about, you know, Vandalay Industries or like
importer exporter,
Rochelle. Those are my two go to Seinfeld. There's like basically the Nymphomaniac is Rochelle. It's mm-hmm. the whole movie. It's like a porno version of Rochelle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Without that, I just feel like my life would be so empty.
I always was a big fan of importing potato chips and exporting diapers, or whatever. I might have gotten the import and export wrong, but it's definitely potato chips and diapers.
He does import export.
I feel like phone calls from people I know are so rare now because we all text or whatever. And when I do get a phone call from someone I know, I always answer and go, "Who is this?"
That's a good one. Yeah, it's one of my favorites as well. It's so hard because like so much of Seinfeld just became part of people's lexicon, even if they didn't watch Seinfeld, just because it was so saturated with the way that people talked. It was like so applicable that like sometimes I'll say things from Seinfeld and not even realize that that's the origin of it.
Yeah,
The morning show where I grew up during the Seinfeld years used to do the Seinfeld trivia where you got $1,000 if you could answer the question before they asked, because there were so many like one-liners that would immediately become part of the zeitgeist. They're just like, pick the one that we liked the most out of the 4 to 5 lines in last night's episode. And we have it written down, and we'll give you $1,000 if you pick it before we actually ask the question.
Yeah, it's like Friends and Going Commando. Like Going mm-hmm. Commando started with Friends, but like it's become so much bigger than that reference.
Everybody emailed us to tell us that Eskimo Brothers came from the League. Now, did that start with the League, or did they just find that? Because I feel like
I know it's because of the League, but I don't. Yeah.
Someone said that to me a long time ago.
Yeah, I feel like I heard that before the League.
It predates the League.
Yeah. Snopes it.
this is a good segue for a segment, quasi-segment I wanted to do this week. I want to go around. Everybody name your favorite show that you watched this week.
Favorite TV show?
Yeah.
Favorite TV show?
Yeah.
It's a low season for TV.
I watched a rerun of Archer.
That's I caught a rerun of Archer on Netflix recently. Jenny and I have been doing House of Cards occasionally, so mm-hmm. it's been Netflixing. But I'd say probably the best watch I get on a week-to-week basis is Brooklyn Nine-Nine. That's
I haven't started DVRing that yet.
Oh, it's really good. I strongly recommend it. It's like
I did the first two and I couldn't.
It's like Andy Samberg at his best, but not too much Andy Samberg, and a really well-balanced cast and good writing. Yeah, I really like it a lot.
I'm sure Andre Brower really brings the gravitas.
He does. He's such a great straight man, especially with you've got someone like so like stupidly unhinged like Andy Samberg, and you just have like Andre Brower just like looking at him unsmiling and delivering a one-liner. It's good stuff.
You have a much higher tolerance for network shows than I do, though.
Yeah, but this is like a network show. It's from Mike Schur, so it's from like the same guy who did The Office or The Office and Parks and Recreation.
Yeah.
So. It's got a good pedigree. It's as good of a network pedigree as you're going to get.
All right. Well, I'm going Masters of Sex, which I think is the now that Boardwalk is I think there's one more Boardwalk, isn't there?
Nope.
No, it's done.
Season finale.
God damn it. Mm-hmm. That makes me sad. But now that that one's gone, I think Masters of Sex is the most solid show going on right now. I have said all the girls are way too attractive and it bugs me, but other than that, you know.
That's always pretty, a bummer when everyone's really
some serious white people problems.
Well, it is kind of bullshit. That Orange is the New Black, I can't watch at all because, like, everybody's way too, like, pretty. And
hot chicks need to go to jail too, Vince.
Yeah, well, it's just I made the mistake of reading the book first. And, like, if I hadn't read the book, it'd be fine. But having read the book, it's just – it's all different in, like, very, like, sanitized, nice person. Like, you get a feel for that, who that person is in the book. And she's kind of vaguely obnoxious. She's like a Smith grad that, like, wrote a memoir and lives in New York, you know. Like,
Did she go to jail? I don't.
Yeah, she went to prison when she was, like, in her mid-30s. And then they got, like, a, you know, 26-year-old actress to play her. And
how dare they?
It's just, you know, it's just off all in that sort of way to make the character more likable and make everything prettier and nicer.
I don't know. I'm kind of like pro only attractive people on television.
Yeah. was that a chair?
That was Brett's gigantic fart. Brett doesn't have TV.
No, I only have network, so I don't have DVR, so I have to watch it when it's on.
Who does that? Yeah. I go to my parents' house, and my mom's like, oh, we don't have DVR yet.
Like
and
an
I just,
animal.
I just look at you, I look at her, I'm like, how do you watch
there's
TV?
Nothing, there's nothing that you need a DVR right now. I get by just fine. You steal live sports with the ESPN Xbox thing and the Sunday ticket with your Madden video games.
Don't explain your Neanderthal ways, Brett.
It's amazing. Like, what are you Chopped is the only thing you're going to miss. And that's
Top
and
Chef. Really, I actually like Top Chef 1,000 times more than Chopped, but.
Yeah. All right.
Literally 1,000 times.
Yeah. No, I just do it because I'm lazy.
Explain
like,
me your ranking of cooking shows, please.
No, honestly, like, I only have cable because I'm too lazy to research all the things that I like.
And there's no need to record anything on it.
Well, I record all the premium shows. I mean, I guess I could get through that with like my Showtime and HBO Go, and yeah,
steal it from someone else and you get it off the onlines.
Yeah. All right.
So I caught the Mindy Project last week, and I was a little impressed by that.
I DVR'd that for a while. I like her.
I think she does a good job. The other people are hit and miss, but she does almost from the three episodes I've seen out of this season. She's always pretty on point.
I would say I'm still excited for Homeland, and I still watch Homeland every week. I look forward to it. It's become ridiculously silly,
mm-hmm.
And it, as Vince and I joke, it's a shark jumping contest or shark jumping event where every week it's just become sort of what silly thing can they do now.
But I will do. I mean, they do a great job of like pissing me off to an insane degree and then bringing me right back.
Well, at least my biggest problem with most drama type shows is they're painfully slow to me, and I always complain that nothing ever happens. And with Homeland, most episodes several things happen. The beginning of the season was pretty bad. I was almost quit the show because the first 3-4 episodes were terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, well, nothing makes proper sense, at least was exciting and interesting.
So this
in the
year,
context of the show.
This year, I gave up on two shows I was majorly invested in, had seen every episode up until then. Sons of Anarchy, just couldn't do it anymore. Got too stupid.
Never got into that one.
The first two seasons of Sons of Anarchy were really good.
The second season of Sons of Anarchy is one of the best seasons of television I've seen. Like, yeah. It's awesome.
It's really good. Henry Rollins is in it.
Yeah.
The third season was, it really started declining, but there was redeeming qualities to it.
The end of season 3 made up for it. Yeah.
Yeah. It got really stupid in the middle. And then season 4 really, it started declining, and season 5 was just like Jesus Christ. And
yeah,
I really like their promos on the buses though, where it's all them in monochrome and they're all like pulling at each other's necks and stuff. I think that's what? It's really good.
I haven't seen your New York promos anymore? Bro.
The other one I gave up on was Walking Dead. I can't do it anymore.
I gave up on
Walking Dead, but not because I wanted to per se. It was one of those things where I watch Sunday Night Football every Sunday night now, and so I've got 3.5 hours of football to watch, and I'm not going to watch an hour long drama when it's midnight. And so
yeah, you guys get screwed over there on the East Coast for football.
Yeah,
it's
and so
awful
like
over here.
It really is.
And it's cold.
And so like everyone's having like the conversations the next day, and like you fall behind one episode, And then, like, if you have a busy week, you don't get caught up. And then it's just this endless parade of being behind on TV.
But if it was Mad Men or The Wire, like, you'd find time to watch it, right?
Exactly.
That's kind of my point is, like, that speaks to, well, you watch it, but is it really that good and do you care that much? And I kind of did the same thing, right, where I'm just like, you know, it's like 9:30. I think I'd rather just, like, read a little bit and then go to bed.
Yeah,
And I'm like not exactly finding time to watch it. So
it's 9:30. I need to get to bed. What do you think, Smokey?
Yeah,
I think you should go to bed too, Brendan. I want you to cut my poop blocks.
Some of us have real jobs.
Smokey says you're tired.
Yeah. Smokey says don't no more TV.
Brendan, come Instagram a picture of me. Arf, arf.
I quit Boardwalk Empire this year.
This season was way better than last season, I think.
I watched, what is this, the fourth season or whatever it is, and I watched like the first half of the season. And the plot line that really made me eject was the his brother's kid as in college. I hated all that.
That was the worst part of the season by far.
Yeah. It was one episode, though.
Well, that...
And there was college girl nudity in it. Come on.
He was in almost every episode.
Yeah, but he wasn't... I don't know. Well, man, the everything with
every time he showed up on screen, I went. Oh.
Everything with Michael Shannon and Richard Harrell made up for it.
Yeah.
By the way,
do you guys catch a little bit of sadness in how much people want to find the next Game of Thrones on TV, like, where they have to find something to talk about?
No.
You don't feel that at all? You don't have a job, Vince.
I get it, but I think that Boardwalk Empire to me is legitimately enjoyable.
I'm not claiming that Boardwalk isn't enjoyable. I'm just saying, like, in a workplace environment, I feel like people are so hungry to have some sort of water cooler thing. Well, they'll just latch on to any fucking show.
Right.
Like, whatever the top of the pool is at the moment, whether it's good or not, on a more absolute scale.
Yeah, like, because, I mean, I loved Breaking Bad, but by the end, I was just so fucking sick of hearing people talk about it.
You loved Breaking Bad?
I mean, by the end, I definitely liked it a lot.
Yeah, you know, kind of liked it.
The only thing that bugged me about it was when people compare it to, like, The Wire or shows that are, like, obviously better. But I liked it a lot. It's still a great show.
I loved Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
I liked it. I wasn't quite as insane for it as everybody else was. And I watched it and I enjoyed it, but I wasn't. The whole thing is, like, everybody wants the show they're totally into right now to be the best ever.
Yeah, they all talk about it in the terms they use for potentially the best show they've ever seen.
Everyone has a fucking memory of 30 seconds long, and it's just like, oh my god, this is the best ever.
I got sick of everybody having like an opinion on the finale of Breaking Bad. Like, everybody reviewed the finale of Breaking Bad, and I was like, all right, man, I don't need that many opinions about the last episode of this TV show.
That's one of the reasons I'm often happy to be writing about sports again instead of TV is that, like, the whole the complete, like, insanity and insular capacity, like sports is huge and everybody watches it, and then, like, TV is this niche thing where a show that's watched by 3 million people but is talked about by everybody in this little tight online circle of Uproxx and AV Club and BuzzFeed and like a couple other handful of sites, New York Magazine, their Vulture site. And it's just like each of us has our own specific reviewer, and I'm going to watch this show and then I'm going to hit refresh on these sites until I get Alan Sepinwall's review and then AV Club's review. And like, and I'm going to like bitch about the grade if the grade isn't the grade that I like. And it's just, it's so exhausting.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That sounds exhausting.
Like, well, there's the movie equivalent of that where they're writing about like Nikki Fink and the Sharon Wack, like the feuding movie bloggers where like one, I think LA Weekly wrote like an 8,000 word piece on like Nikki Fink. And I'm just like, there is not a single person who's not a film journalist who gives a flying fuck about
Nikki Fink. I didn't
even
know who she was until you told me who she was.
You shouldn't. She's just a cunty cunt that writes cunty articles. That's her whole, like, I don't know. When people are like, oh, she like writes about movies with snark. I mean, A, I don't really like the word snark that much, but B, like, she's not writing snarky. She's just being bitchy about everything.
Yeah, she's just She's just a C word.
Like, there's no joke. Like, she's never once made a joke. It's just like just straight negative bitchiness.
Yeah, she's just being a bitch to people. And it's like, it's not even like people who deserve it. It's just like people who have like not given, like, gave an exclusive to someone besides her.
Yeah, it's all just who has wronged me personally and why exactly. I dislike them now. Anyway, we were introduced to a new personality this week. Connor Pritchard turned me on to Chef Seth and his healthy snack crew. And Matt, I saw this morning, so I'm going to introduce you guys.
Peace and blessings. Welcome to the Chef Seth Show. Again, with World of Plenty raw organic vegan food in Oakland. And I'm over here at Whole Foods in Oakland, California, with the homie Pichel.
Pichel, happy Saturday.
And we are about to head to the studio to do a Colorful Kids track with the homie Devi Genuine. Big up, Devi. And we're just over here talking about, like, what are healthy foods that you eat on a regular basis that inspire you. So I was going to let Pichel tell you a little bit about, like, what are some healthy things that keep him sustained and inspired. Pichel?
Fruits and veggies all day. We're talking about watermelon, pineapple, Granny Smith's, peaches, especially in the summer, bananas, I just munched two, keeping it local, keeping it organic. What else am I into? Really into, like, some kind of trail mix. Like, let me get all the goodies. Goji berry, pistache, cacao nibbies, you know, sun-dried.
The first time he said goji berry and pistache, I fucking lost it.
It's just like, I don't have enough energy to say the last syllable. You know what I'm saying?
That's incredible. I've never heard someone talk about fruits like weed or
pistache, goji berries.
Dude, I just munched some two bananas. I just munched two bananas so hard, dude.
Evan's veggies all day.
Evan hit the nail on the head when he's like, "This is the most peculiar combination of ultra white stereotypes that there is." It's just
like the super stoner hippie.
Super stoner hippie mixed with like Chet Hayes with like maybe there's like a dash of like super positive Juggalo vibes in there.
These people only exist between San Francisco and Seattle. This is only that like thin strip of crunchy white privilege where right. It's just like that you're able to do that. Like and like some of it hits a little bit like too close because yes, I am white. Yes, tonight my dinner tonight was potato leek soup and kale salad. I eat these foods. But I'm also not like.
But you don't represent these foods. And dessert?
Kale.
Dessert? Goji berries.
Get them superfoods from our smoothies. You know what I'm saying?
You didn't write a rap about it. But I think like this is almost too grungy for San Francisco. Like this is a straight up Oakland thing right here because. Like it's
certain parts of the city, but the parts of the city where it come from, like hate area, they're more like sketchy drug, almost homeless mm-hmm. people, like homeless on purpose. Where this dude, what else am I mashing these days, bro?
All right, let's see what else they got.
Something raise, keep it good. What else are we thinking about?
Is that raisins?
The health
options? Raisins.
Always superfoods. If you can get them in. Put them in the morning. We're talking about health force, vitamineral greens. Put that in the water. Put that in the smoothie. I want some blackberries and raspberries and strawberries. I need veggie sammies with the avo. Let's throw the blueberries in there if we're coming all the way from the Amazonian.
Blueberries are in season right now, too. They're dang.
Trying to get the acai. Trying to get the pomegranler.
Get some mulberry.
Wait, what? Pomegranler.
About that avo life, dog.
Dude, I'm banging.
It sounds like the Hamburglar from McDonald's. The guy that goes around and steals pomegranates.
I'm so unironically in love with Pomegranler.
The guy that comes around and steals your fruit. I love
He's
that.
Like, oh, God. I definitely went to high school with guys like this.
The Whole Foods, that could definitely be Whole Foods mascot. Oh, it's the Pomegranler. Yo, blueberries are dank. Get off my couch, Pomegranler.
just stays for a week.
Bro, I just made you some kale salad. Get out of here, Palma Grandler.
Quit stealing my dank blueberries.
I told you Sheila doesn't like you here.
Why'd you turn my walk-in closet into a recording studio?
Blueberries are dank, bro.
They're so in season right now.
Just munching some trail mix. It gives me all this energy to write raps.
Veggie sandwich with the Avo. I can get behind, like, obviously veggie we all accept. Avo, annoying, but okay. Rays for raisin is not an acceptable abbreviation.
Yeah. You don't have to shorten two syllables.
There's
ever.
Some things that are so short that they shorten, and it's just like, I remember like in the late 90s, people tried to shorten pizza to za, and you're like, no. Yeah. That's harder to say than pizza.
Yeah.
Mauled ink. Oh, yeah, those inkenberries are amazing. The hums of raisins.
Rays, we're talking about.
And all the way live.
Salad. I'm talking about spinach. I'm talking about romaine. Give me that kale. I want some carrots. I want extra beets. Please. If it tastes like dirt.
Some purple cabbage chopped up in there for flair.
You know it's good.
Cilantro. Some basil. Some mint.
Extra mint.
They've named every vegetable on earth.
I was going to say they've named every potential.
Got some Belgian endive. Some fucking... fucking flat leaf parsley in there, bro. You get yourself.
Don't forget about the parsonator.
Oh, you get some fucking rutabaga in there, bro.
Oh, the bagas.
Oh, dude, fucking cellar.
Oh yeah, give me some cellar sal, dog.
Some fucking cellar sal, bro, and some Fuji's. You get those Japanese apples in you, fucking.
Like I don't want just one kind of kale. Give me all four. Give me that curly. Give me that purple. I want the lacinato. I want the dinosaur kale.
Fucking dinosaurs, dank.
Come, baby. Let's get those juicing going. Let's get some watermelon juice with some mint lemonade.
Make a quick lime cilantro dressing with no oil.
Sounds
all the way fresh. Totally vibrant and makes you feel alive in every sense of the being. Word up, word up. Well, thank you for coming on the show.
That's the show?
Yeah, I think so.
That's the whole show? It's them just naming off every fruit or vegetable available?
It's like the Animaniacs thing where they name every country they just go through, but they just slowly wrap every herb in the store.
Who is that guy at the end?
Thank you for coming on the Chef Seth show.
That's Chef Seth and Pachow.
No, but who's the guy at the end?
Seth Chef. Chef Seth. That's hard to say.
Yeah.
Chef Seth.
Chef Seth. Show.
They needed. That's as much time as they have before they need to get in the studio.
They did not. They gave zero love to broccoli, zero love to asparagus, zero love to Brussels sprouts.
No potatoes?
That's too traditional, bro. That's your mom's
potatoes.
Vegetables.
Too many carbs, bro.
Yeah.
I want that fresh shit.
Yo, the purple potatoes, the perps.
Yo, get those weak ass white starches up out of here.
The perps.
The perps.
Yo, I want that sweet potato.
You got to eat the peel on with the peel on. That's where the vitamins are, dog.
Yo, sweet potatoes so in season right now. They dang.
Hey, fingerlings. Fucking.
You got blueberries dank.
Well, because that's because they're in season right now. They're not always dank. Right
it should
now,
also be noted that this was only the audio side of things, and the way that these people look are exactly the way that you think that they look, except more.
Yeah.
It's like if you imagined a cartoon character and then the cartoon character and you both were on acid.
Yes.
He's got like an African tunic that's tie-dyed somehow.
And they're both clean shaven, of course.
Give me a half hoe of lentils, and if that sack ain't obese, you won't make the sale.
Oh, snap.
Lentils are delicious.
Yeah.
Give me them fucking lentils.
Beep, beep, beep.
Fucking blueberries.
How many of y'all packing some kale right now? Make some noise.
Oh, my.
Yeah, really, but no love for broccoli. No love for sweet potatoes. Both superfoods.
Mmm. That's
just
true.
Just saying. He's all about them superfoods.
What about Brussels sprouts?
Step up your game, Chef Seth and Pachow.
Brussy Spees.
I want to hang out with those guys and then beat them to death with something heavy and blunt.
Vince has been hanging out at the Whole Foods in Oakland for the last couple of weeks trying to meet him.
Yeah. Have they someday.
They haven't been around.
Maybe we can pay him a visit when you're out here for Christmas, Matt.
Yeah.
Actually, I know a guy in college who basically does that exact thing, like puts his videos. Puts his videos up on Facebook, and it's like weird spoken word poetry about like fruit. And he has like some sort of cockamamie institute where he says that he can cure your nearsightedness by making you eat like bananas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That sounds scientific.
It sounds legit. Not to bring things down too much, but I did want to talk about Paul Walker.
R.I.P.
Our boy.
Oh. R.I.P. Brian.
Yeah.
Not Brian the dog, even though totally Family Guy Illuminati.
Mm.
Brian the dog died when a red car hit him. Brian from Fast and Furious died in a red car. What? Seth from Family Guy, totally Illuminati, just saying.
Dude, I heard that fucking Brian the dog had a secretary named Paul Walker, and Paul Walker had a dog.
Named Paul Walker.
Paul Walker also had a dog named Paul Walker. How crazy is that? Oh! But, so here's Vin Diesel at the memorial.
Show the love that you've shown, Paul.
Sorry, the bullhorn threw me off.
You're going to stay with me forever. I just wanted to say thank you. Thank you for coming down here and showing that angel up in heaven how much you appreciate it.
Sir, step away from the squad car.
So I don't know, like, I don't want to, you know, rip on people for grieving, but I don't know if it's just an actor thing or the fact that Vin Diesel and Tyrese already sort of do the thing where they have this whole, they put everything on Facebook because it's like a way to connect with their fans actually, you know, they eat all that shit up. But I don't know, it seems really weird, the part where they're sort of like, I don't know. It seems weird to go to the guy's gravesite and make like videos and talk to the fans on a bullhorn.
Yeah. Sacrilegious?
I don't know about sacrilegious. Just weird in some way that I can't quite put my finger on.
Profane.
But it just doesn't seem like a normal way to grieve.
Yeah, and it seems like they're sort of making it about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, but on some level, it's like we all know that this. I mean, he's an actor, but he's just sort of this random dude, and we're
right.
Even talking about this guy. I mean, the fact that people are going to a crash site of someone that they have never and would never meet, and yet they're sad about it, is I don't know. It doesn't bum me out that like Vin Diesel and Tyrese.
Doesn't bum me out.
Well, or whatever. I don't feel like they're exploiting anything. It's more, I would think. It probably helps the fans that are there to have the other people that he was close with at least come and talk for a little bit. I don't think it hurts anything.
I don't think it hurts them. I don't know. The impulse to like go from being sad by yourself and with the people that actually like knew that guy to go from that to a bunch of people that didn't know him and sort of like lead a parade.
But I think anyone that is going... there's going to be certain people that are just going out of seeing a car crash site type thing.
Sure.
But there's people that I'm sure were, whether it was genuine or not, felt some sort of connection to him as an actor or a celebrity or whatever. He was a beautiful man.
He did have those eyes.
I never thought much of his acting, but he was very attractive. But I would think that as his celebrity friends, maybe it helps the fans, maybe it helps themselves sort of grieve with everyone else that, whether they knew Paul Walker or not, were sort of there, sad as well.
And maybe
I feel like you need a two-way connection to properly grieve. Like if it's just you being a fan, I don't think you get any special privileges.
But I'm saying maybe it was helpful to even Vin Diesel and Tyrese to go down there
right.
And see it.
Yeah.
And then
because that's their whole world is like relating to fans, and that's their way of dealing with it is by continuing to be weirdly dependent on strangers.
Yeah, and I just, it's probably, it's difficult for us as only semi-celebrities it's got to be weird though when someone that you actually know very personally dies and it's a gigantic news story and you're on this same level of them where people do
people do I see what you're saying, like Vin Diesel gets carte blanche to do whatever he wants because he's actually probably hurting.
Well, I think it's kind of an extension of pretty much everything Vin Diesel and Tyrese doing being kind of weird. So yeah. I'm actually not surprised that I find their grieving process sort of odd. And
they also live a day-to-day life that some of the a lot of the stuff they do would probably be hard for us to instantly jump in and understand. You know, when you just walk around and people are yelling your name,
right?
I would think there's probably a lot of people that told them, and whether they believed it, they're like, people want to hear what you have to say about this. It does make. I'm sure they also wanted to go down there just as sort of a closure to even what happened.
Well, I get that part, but the part where you jump on the, like the bullhorn and like, my buddy's an angel up in heaven.
Yeah, well, he's never not broadcast anything,
right? Well, yeah. Here, I have another clip from Tyrese.
Damn, it just feels so weird being all sexy and stuff at the place where my friend died. I think I'm going to sing a song about it.
I want to say to all of the women that are out there, you know, a lot of women, especially black women in particular.
Whoa.
You know, y'all are on this independent kick. You know, I don't need no man. I'm independent. I want y'all to know the difference. There is a very big difference. Independence in the eyes of a man is when we say we want an independent woman. We don't want a woman that's just holding on to her sexy and nice body to help her to get through life. You don't want to work. You don't want to go to college or school. You're not inspired to do anything on any level to try and help further yourself. You just want to be sexy and freeload. Nobody wants that as a man.
Like they put the like sexy music behind him to as if it's gonna make it make sense whatever the fuck he's talking about.
I had only previously heard the audio of that, and I just want to let everyone know that he's doing a lot of LL Cool J lip licking during that whole thing. It's very disconcerting.
Yeah.
He also goes on a strange tangent about like that's like why there's lesbians,
right?
You know, yeah. It's a whole weird thing. And actually, a guy who
I think that's a thread of the black pastor thing, sort of.
Yeah, there is.
They used to play a guy on Stern that did that. Were like lesbian. They had a couple drops.
There's a guy who I'm friends with on Facebook who's lives in Houston, and he's very Southern Baptist, and he's black, and he posted this whole like screed about how men. All men, just painting everybody like you're not being manly enough, and because you're a pussy, women are actually going to be with other women because you're not man enough,
right?
And so men need to be more assertive and more dominant over the women, and then they won't become lesbians.
Yeah, not cry during movies like a little faggot.
Yeah, I mean it was like I was like I did the whole like click to comment like. And like about to type something in, and I'm just like, what? What am I?
No, yeah, I do that like at least like 7 times a day, where I'm like, I want to. Oh, this is a really good quip about that, and I'm like, this isn't going to help anything.
Right. Like, I'm just not going to engage this person. Yeah, it's just better that's to not the best engage. Thing for everybody.
Like when someone calls me like a fuckhead for like some random article I wrote, I'm like, never mind. I'm just gonna let this go.
Yeah, you let those.
What was
slide.
The movie everyone was all mad at you for not that they hadn't seen yet that they're all mad at you for not liking?
Punching Robots movie.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Pacific Rim, where they flipped that on you.
I watched that this week, and it definitely wasn't great, but it was better than maybe because you and everyone else had said how awful it was.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as awful as I expected it to be. The CGI was at least good, but and I felt like a lot of it was sort of. Tongue in cheek with the silliness of it.
I wanted it to be tongue in cheek. I was trying to see.
There was nothing tongue in cheek about it. You have to be self aware of what you're executing.
Yeah, it was that was so disappointing that something that was clearly made with a lot of love was just an assemblage of action movie tropes without any sort of cheekiness.
Yeah.
And then like even these big, awesome action set pieces, which, by the way, after the beginning, we had to wait forever to see.
Yeah.
Like, even that, like, it was like, you know what? I'm just going to make all the action all the action scenes happen at night when it's, like, raining and you can't really see anything.
Terrible.
And don't, like, pan back, let me see the robots fight each other. like,
and turn down the goddamn theme song for fuck's sake.
Yeah, yes. Oh god, yeah, and every time and just blaring it.
And so, like, while I enjoyed it, like, there was enough action to, like, make me happy and, like, and provide a good time. I was disappointed because it could have been so much more fun. It could have been so much more enjoyable. And yet, like, you get, like, little glimpses of what it could have been. But instead, it's just, like, stereotypes and cliches and, like, action set pieces that could have been even better. So,
I think some people just aren't equipped to shoot action scenes. I think there's a definite technique that people assume they're good at and then aren't. Like, I was watching the World's End and was blown away by how ridiculously good Edgar Wright has gotten at fight scenes.
Yeah,
where I wasn't even expecting it. And I was just like, holy shit, that was fucking awesome.
Because he knows, he understands it's like this slapstick dance and he's...
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's down to editing, which might not be him. You might just... like have a good editor in tow, but I think that setting it up at least takes some directorial talent, and some people probably just aren't equipped for it.
Yeah, the everything in Pacific Rim, Ufford, I hear you completely. Where it was like the sort of tease of it, it was like it was a 40% of what could have been a fun, much better movie. I think I just had this expectation that it was going to be a gigantic poop sandwich. And it wasn't.
It's not at all. It's not. Yeah, like there are elements of it that are making it a perfectly acceptable, fun summer movie.
But there was for sure a 30-minute section, the sort of right before the sort of final fight scene that was just dragged on when it was.
I didn't want any people in that movie. They could have cut out every single character and just had three robot fights and made it a 15-minute movie. And I've been like, okay,
Brett's like,
B+.
I really relate to this.
The thing that blew my mind about that movie is when I would read reviews and they're like, isn't it great that we finally have like a strong female character in Pacific Rim? And I'm like, you mean like the white screenwriter wet dream of what an Asian chick is like? Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, she wasn't the super strong character.
Yeah, she just wanted to fuck that white dude.
Yeah, she was like totally
granted,
passive.
He was good looking.
She was totally passive, except she was like good with a bow stick or whatever.
Yeah, she's totally passive, good with a bow stick, and emotionally fragile.
She gives a mean neural hand job.
Yeah, all of the terms were so ridiculous and over the top.
I liked that part of it.
The neural loads.
The neural handshake. It was great.
You gotta
I love
get
that.
The e-semen in your mind, Vag.
Yeah. I wish it would, like, if it was more tongue-in-cheek, like some of the terms, I would have loved it, but man.
Neural hand job, I like.
Gonna rust, bust a robot nut.
Some of the...
They really were about a percentage away from a Transformer style, like the robots having swinging balls or something. I wouldn't have been surprised if they had, like, one of them had, like, a fire cock or something.
Oh, God, I forgot that one Transformer had nuts, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That just ruined Brendan's night.
Yeah, I'm going to go kill myself now. Bye.
It had truck nuts.
So this other thing that I'm enjoying in the wake of the...
Sorry, let me interrupt you real quick. On the subject of truck nuts, my favorite part about the whole Riley Cooper incident was like an eyewitness who was tailgating with, you know, the whole like when he's, you know, threw down the N-bomb at the Kenny Chesney concert.
Mm-hmm.
If you're
going to do it, I mean, that's one of
right,
the best
a witness
places.
Later claimed that they were tailgating with him and his truck had truck nuts. That was my favorite part
right.
of that whole incident.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Standard.
Anyone who's saying the N-word at a Kenny Chesney concert, I'm going to go ahead and make the leap in logic that, yes, he has truck nuts on his truck.
Matt, what if I also told you that, Matt. What if I also told you that the suspect allegedly spent a significant amount of time in the state of Florida?
I'll buy that for a dollar.
Hold on. Was he drinking beer out of a can?
Yes.
Hot damn.
So, Vince, I can tell like a dog with a tennis ball under the couch. I know that you want to get back to Paul Walker.
Well, I did. I had a couple more articles that on the subject of the SEO baiting that goes on in the wake of any significant event, like any significant
celebrity died. Let's make some money.
Well, any significant event becomes a search term on the internet, and thus you write. An article about it, even if it's like something that happened, like Paul Walker died. That's a paragraph, but now we gotta spend at least like CNN had like a 5,000-word post called Five Reasons the Porsche blah 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 isn't like other cars.
Megan Fox upskirt.
Yeah. And then the curious, the other part where it's like, all right, look, Paul Walker seemed like a good guy. He died. That sucks. But now there's a bunch of articles going around. Here's one from Yahoo. This is the lead. Paul Walker was on the verge of transforming his on-screen persona to that of a gritty anti-hero like Steve McQueen and Clint Eastwood have done before him. Walker's director on the 2005 action suspense film Running Scared definitely thinks the late actor, who died tragically on Saturday in a fiery car crash, was on the cusp of realizing his full potential. I always told Paul that his most exciting years were going to be in his 40s and 50s, wrote Wayne Kramer. We talked about how Paul was going to be my Lee Marvin, and we were hungry to make those kinds of films that could show Paul in that light.
Running Scared was horrendous, by the way.
I've never seen it, but there are a lot of people who really like Running Scared.
I've heard that. I haven't seen really? It either.
Jesus.
Here's another article. This one's from an award site. I love the question mark headline. Does Paul Walker deserve an Oscar nomination for Hours? In Hours, Walker portrays a father desperate to save his infant daughter soon after his wife dies in childbirth. The girl is hooked up to a respirator, which suddenly fails when Hurricane Katrina hits, zapping electricity. Blah, 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 blah. Walker's performance is quite impressive here. Do you think he deserves an Oscar, or at least a nomination? And then there's a reader poll. Should Paul Walker be nominated for an Oscar? And keep in mind, this movie doesn't come out for 2 weeks. So
no one's seen it.
No one has seen it, including press. It hasn't screened for press. But, hey.
I'm going to say they went like 70% yes.
Matt.
I can think of at least five movies I haven't seen that are more deserving of Oscars than this other movie that
Vince,
I haven't seen.
Vote and see.
10 movies we haven't seen that we think are better than ours.
Vince, vote yes and see what the results are.
I should write that article. That's a great idea.
You should. Get them SEO dollars.
Yeah. What is it? Five movies that we haven't seen that we think will do better than the ours?
Yeah.
A 25-slide slideshow.
Yeah. All with gifts.
I can't. I'm going to go get some more whiskey. This is just making me stress the fuck out.
This is the state of the internet now, Brett. Don't run. Don't run from
it. While we're talking about making a quick buck off of I don't want to say make a quick buck, because, like, again, like, most people that blog on a day-to-day basis don't see, like, extra money for extra hits. But
don't tell Vince that.
Money.
One of the gossip blogs pointed out that Paul Walker's girlfriend was he was 33 and she was 16 when they started dating.
Nice.
Yeah.
There's still hope for us.
Yeah. So, that seems like, I guess, pretty cool, I guess. Yeah. I, as someone who's pretty close to the age of 33, the notion of dating someone at all is terrible.
I can vouch for that.
Being married is pretty great.
As someone who's not married, I can vouch for it being terrible.
But, like, the notion of dating someone, like, younger than, like, 26 is pretty terrible.
Yeah.
And, like, the notion of dating a straight-up teenager makes me, like, I walk past groups of teenagers and I'm like, oh, my God, I want to push them into traffic.
Yeah.
Like,
everybody's got that friend where you're like, man, how does Joe pull all that hot tail? God, he's always got, like, a really hot, like, 22-year-old girlfriend. Oh, man, how does he do it? And then you watch him in action, and you realize that that guy just has, like, an incredible attention span for just, like, talking to 22-year-old girls. And them just, you know, they don't have anything to say, and you just have to sit there and yes and.
Laugh a lot
and pretend to give a shit about whatever.
I like 22- electronic dance music, too.
Yeah. And I have, like, the attention span of a gnat, and I just think, oh, my God, I need to blow my brains out right now. But
nothing, as someone who was once, like, a young man going out in Pacific Beach, San Diego, something Brendan said always, like, stuck with me, where you go out and, like, you try to, like, come off as, like, you want to try to say something, like, smart and funny and insightful and, like, and get these people, get women drawn to you. And then one of, like, Brendan's teammates, like, would tickle a girl. Like, just come up the street, have a tickler, and she'd be like, ah, ha, 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 you're funny.
No, he wouldn't just tickle her. He would go, hey, girl, you ticklish.
He's actually dating Humpty from Digital Underground.
Yeah, it worked, man.
One of you guys needs to stop hitting your computers over there.
Oh, sorry, that's probably me.
My buddy Steve, man, that worked like a charm.
Yeah.
Hey, girl, you ticklish.
Hey, girl, you ticklish. He said all the time. That was his go-to line.
And it worked, huh?
Yep.
Before
they were. That's the thing.
Yeah. Everybody's ticklish.
It's true.
It's just never know.
It works on so many levels. Before we get into reader questions, I did want to point out this BuzzFeed article because...
Uh-oh, Brett's going to kill himself.
I this was amazingly BuzzFeed-y. First of all,
you're going to do that after the Paul Walker SEO topic.
I am.
Really just lined up to piss me off,
yep,
isn't it?
Yep.
So, listeners out there, every week there's some new BuzzFeed thing that either usually Vince or Brett send around, and they're basically like, I want to jump off the flat side of the earth when I read this. They have so much passionate hatred for BuzzFeed. It's impressive.
Well, Brett does. It's amazing. I mean, I get it. So... This is, first of all, it's written by a guy named Ruff McThickridge, who is
a corporate mascot for a potato chip company.
For Ruffles. For Ruffles potato yeah. chips.
I thought Brett made up that.
He's their Ron Burgundy. Like someone decided that this was a character that
I
would help
Brett,
them sell potato chips.
I thought you made that name up.
No, that's actually the name. Oh God.
So here's the list that Ruff McThickridge of Ruffles wrote for BuzzFeed. It's called 20 Things Guys in Their 20s Need.
Oh, I can't wait.
One, a real bed.
Oh, number one, totally.
Two, a pickup line that's actually funny. No, it doesn't give any examples of these. Okay, now, three, a brass knuckle meat pounder.
Well, when you're in your, like, now that I'm in my 30s, I don't need it as much, but in my 20s, I could have used that.
Four, dental floss. I just love that it's just random. It's random things mixed with, like, blatant marketing ideas.
What number is potato chips?
Five, a foolproof way to stop your roommates from drinking your whiskey. And then it's a link to like a lock that you can put on your... I don't know how that would actually work. Six, season tickets.
Oh my God, you guys. Two and
to
six.
To the sports
totally.
Field.
Especially six.
Seven, a thing that makes stuffed hamburgers. And then it's a link to the Hamburger Press from Williams-Sonoma that they're obviously partners with. Eight, an ill-advised tattoo. Nine, the ability to play three chords.
Like, there's not even a, there's not a thematic.
There's nothing
here.
It's completely random. 10, a not terrible umbrella.
Like that is unrelated to anything male, 20-year-old potato chip.
11,
internet. It's not even number related.
As a money making male in my 20s, I need a good umbrella.
A passport with a stamp. 12, decent speakers.
Then there's a gif of speakers moving.
There is. It's funny because there is. 13, a crazy ex-girlfriend.
Oh my God, totally. Guys,
like,
this is written just for me. LOL, 13.
14, stuff to make fancy cocktails.
Not if your roommates are drinking all your good whiskey.
15, health insurance.
Oh, totally. I need that.
And there's like a link to Obamacare.
16, a dog that can do tricks. 17, a barber they can trust.
Yeah, you can't have a barber who just shaves a line down your head like in this amusing gif.
Not like when you were 16 going to your mom.
Also, the caption on that gif says, so not this guy.
You don't want to go to him. He's not a good barber.
He's a terrible barber.
It's the opposite of what we said earlier.
He didn't even go to Barber Junior College. 18, a restaurant where they can order the usual.
Fuck.
First of all, 20-year-olds? Like, it's 25? You need to have a restaurant
don't,
where you can
don't
order?
Don't think it. Don't think it. You're letting them win. Every time you put a moment of thought into this,
see,
you let them win.
We got to rile up Brett and so he explodes.
And then number...
I already commented. This is the second time I've had to deal with this fucking garbage.
Number 20 is a bropener, which is a don't bang up the corner of your table opening those brewskis. Get a bropener instead.
I didn't understand.
Light yourself on fire.
I didn't quite understand because that would have to be pretty solidly installed.
Well,
on the side of the table.
Look, they're partners, and you know that's all that matters.
With bropener.
So I don't really get what the point of that is, though, because none of it really linked. There's not specific products with affiliate links. It's not
stop.
Like
stop thinking about it. It is machines.
I love
each other.
I love Brett's responses to these because they're always so well thought out. Brett's email response when I sent him the link. It's even more annoying because their content devolves into self-parody on upload, so there is nothing more asinine you can use to mock it. They have produced the dumbest combination of words possible, repeatedly and without remorse. Like, I guarantee top 23 sounds a retarded goose would shit when because Pokemon the is already on their site.
His passionate anger.
He's very passionate. Yeah. And then this one. An entire nation screaming numbers they agree with at each other. Fucking eight! Fucking eight! I also eat food, so true. Blood sprays from nose from pure enjoyment overload as the lols become inhumanly shrill.
What's weird is it's like every time these go out, it's starting to take on an actual narrative form. Like there's currents that are sort of recurring in my rage emails.
Quiet, faraway voice. The machine and I are one now. The network is sorrow. It's protocol, pain. Packet lost. Packet lost. Packet lost.
Yeah, it's now again, like there's no everything happens in like by degrees. Like I happened to work for a company that just released the SB Nation gift guide. Mm-hmm. And it's this thing that's like it's blown out with like really beautiful design and nice photography and like here's shit to buy, you know, and it's sponsored and it's clearly like advertising, but it's also got like our own like editorial touch to it. So it's obvious, it's blatant. We've called it the SB Nation gift guide. Like it is something like here's shit to buy. Like it's mm-hmm. it's essentially a very pretty ad. And like so I can't exactly like you know thumb my nose at something that's like that's also like whatever they call it, advertorial content or marketing content or whatever.
Yes, you can. Because there's advertorial that's blatantly – that's – you're being open about like this is advertorial. You know what I mean? Like you're not trying to Trojan horse it into a listicle about being in your 20s.
It's just when you are the one company that does something that's the lowest common denominator and like – you know, Bleacher Report, if we're talking about sports, Bleacher Report's got, like, undergone a makeover and they're trying to make stuff that isn't just SEO baiting garbage, although that's their reputation. You know, they're doing better things. They've made some good hires. So, but in its earliest form, it was this thing that, like, preying on people who were bad at internet searches or who weren't able to tell that what they were clicking on was bad and useless.
They fucking own the SEO for show me the score of the Yankees game.
Exactly.
How come Yankees score?
And what BuzzFeed is at its worst. And like, again, I like people that work there. There are some people doing good stuff with news, blah, blah, blah. Those caveats aside, BuzzFeed at its worst is just like internet slurry for people who are bad at social media. Yeah. Who are just like, oh, this list of like 28 things that prove to me that I'm from this county in Illinois, I'm gonna share with my other friends from this county in Illinois.
2 and 8.
What's doubly sad is that everyone sort of claims that it's either these corporate spam baffles Mick Ridgecroft or just jackasses that UGC that shit where they post it and they're like, it's just some jerk off. It's not our, but then like their actual sponsored editorial content from the people that they pay is like equally garbage and not really English.
Yeah. Yep.
Monsters.
All right. Well, we got some listener questions.
Users.
Users. Listeners. Frauders. Listener word bucket.
Yeah.
They're internet friends.
We got
internet
listener words
we haven't met.
Word bucket this week.
What are you going to go with?
What do you got?
There's a couple short ones. One was Rich from England. He said Teenage Fraudcast Ninja Turtles. He's going for a series of MRI scans soon in the hospital stay. I can listen to music, whatever, on device. I was thinking about putting on a Fraudcast. Hopefully this one. Maybe you could say something to help me focus as I lie perfectly still inside a tube magnet. Or, you know, just some dick jokes. Lying down in a gown. Rich from England. I never had any MRIs.
What if he kicked down a beatbox for him?
Ooh, give him one.
Burr, burr. I do the bass line.
Burp, 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 burp.
Worst a cappella group ever.
These guys could go on forever.
Well, you gotta add a fucking,
I don't know what to
sound.
Do. I never,
you gotta
add some layers.
Just add any layer, man.
I never know what to do with you guys.
You just go meep.
I gave you like two or three measures of hi hat, and then I was out.
He's probably gonna die in that MRI.
Yeah, he's gonna get.
I don't think you're supposed to bring headphones have metal in them.
Yeah, I don't think you can bring a music device into an MRI.
Maybe like a jam box.
No, they have.
You put a little plastic jam box on your chest.
Plug your plug your device or whatever, and the speakers play while you're in an MRI.
Yeah. Then the doctor
must have gone to a janky ass MRI.
No, the doctor puts the headphones in and he has to sing you the songs that you want.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
She's a breaking, I'm drowning slowly.
Brett's the doctor.
I'm your doctor.
I'm glad you went straight to Ben Folds.
Up the coast and up, heading nowhere.
We got some questions specifically for Matthew.
Oh, boy.
Are the Spurs the best franchise in sports over the past 20 years? And this is because you just posted a thing about the Spurs.
Oh, they're so annoying. They're so fucking good every year. And Tim Duncan, I'm beginning to think he's 37 years old. He just had, a game where he had 23 points and 20-plus rebounds and scored the game-winning basket. And it's just like, this is going to be the 17th consecutive season that the Spurs have had a winning percentage that puts them like on, 50 plus wins in an 82 game season. And it's just like, man, they're good every single year. Like literally every year, like there's just no equivalent. I guess the Red Wings in hockey have had like a 20 or 22 year stretch where they've also been pretty damn good every year. But I don't know of any examples besides the Spurs that are that good. Like the Yankees obvious.
But they've had down years for sure.
Yeah, they're since they had their run of, was it 4 out of 5 World Series in the mid to late 90s, and then they've gotten one or two more wins this past decade, plus trips to the ALCS and World Series. So the Yankees are an obvious choice as well. But the Spurs, because they're in that smaller market and because they're not a glamorous team, they don't have the LeBrons or like Tim Duncan's not a flashy player, and they don't have like the guys who have those big endorsements, and they don't have the huge bankroll that the Yankees do. So like the Spurs do it, and it's kind of like under the radar thing that it's done with like awesome coaching and smart roster decisions. And it's one of those things that, like, we should all be like, oh, wow, this is the team that we should all admire. But what I'm really mad about when the playoffs come around, I'm like, oh, I want this awesome, flashy, fun team to win. And the Spurs just kind of are like the fat guy that lays on top of them and, like, squeezes the air out of the fun team.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's kind of who they are.
As a non-sports fan, can you give me the cliff notes of why everyone hates A-Rod? Because I honestly, I don't follow baseball enough to know. I don't get it.
I hate him. It's pretty easy to hate him.
But why? Explain why.
He's very aloof. He thinks of himself differently than the rest of the world sees him. And he's very delusional, more than a lot of sports celebrities.
Who cares? I mean,
he's just very easy to dislike in the sense that he thinks of himself in a different context.
He's me.
It's Brett as A-Rod. The way that he talks about himself is even more grandiose than most crazy sports celebrities, in my opinion.
So at age 16, Alex Rodriguez, a high school junior playing for the U.S. like junior national team, was approached by Scott Boras, the most famous like sports agent in all of the sports. Boras approached him and was like, I want to represent you when you go for the draft. Another person told him, like, as a junior in high school, if you don't fuck this up, you'll be the number one pick. And so he's basically, like, his entire personhood has been put on hold so that he can be like star baseball player. And all he's done as that star baseball player has been seek out richer and richer contracts. He was drafted by the Mariners, played really well for them, left them to play for a division rival for a bigger contract, the biggest contract in history up until that point.
10 years,
left the Texas Rangers
million.
For the New York Yankees for the biggest contract in history. And he hasn't really fit in the clubhouse, doesn't like fit and mash with teammates. He has a reputation for disappearing on the biggest stage. And because he's never really developed as a person, comes off as aloof and weird. And then there's like his
marriage.
But
that all seems like gossipy stuff. It's not like it seems odd for sports fans to care about.
You gotta realize that baseball fans are by and large, like they're the smart ones that are on the internet talking about VORP and war and all that.
Yeah.
But like baseball fans by and large skew older, skew traditional, and
like a knitting circle.
Things like hustle and camaraderie in the clubhouse are more important than just beating the shit out of the ball and hitting dingers, you know?
There's no camaraderie.
Exactly. So it's one of those things where it's like, here's this guy who's really good at what he does, but he's kind of a dick and we don't really like having him around. Oh, and by the way, we're paying him a ton of money because we didn't want him to go to a different team. But now we don't want him, but we still have to pay him. And it's just this huge thing. And then you throw it. And I haven't even brought up the whole, like, the fact that he's an obvious, like, PED user. And now, like, Bud Selig, he's going up against Bud Selig. And they're both, like, neither one is somebody that you can really root for. It's just a fucking mess.
The PED thing is so obnoxious.
He's not a very likable person, and baseball's a goddamn mess.
So it's like everybody's like, oh, man, they use PEDs, blah, 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 and everything's tainted. It's like, well, the pitchers were using them too, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
To go back to Matt's previous point about the Spurs, another thing I can think about, it is and thinking about like the fat guy just sitting on the more fun team and slowly squeezing the life out of them. I still lament we were talking about hockey earlier. Hockey in the early to mid-90s was amazing. You had some really talented players.
Lemieux versus Gretzky.
Yeah. There are a lot of really talented players, a lot of high-scoring games. And in my opinion, it kind of culminated with the year the Rangers won the Stanley Cup. And it was very popular. Yeah, it was like the 94-95 season.
I remember that because of the 30 for 30. Where their parade was the same day as OJ.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Riding dirty on the freeway.
Yeah. So, and a lot of people would say, I still remember there was like a Sports Illustrated cover that said like the NBA is dead and the NHL is like the next big thing. And so they were really riding high. And then 2 years later, there was this really awful lockout that was just completely botched from a PR standpoint by both sides.
Oh, terrible. Terrible.
Yeah, by both sides, they ended up missing games, and they really didn't accomplish that much, which then set the stage for another lockout, I think 10 years later.
Yeah, more recently.
Yeah, which was just – and so a lot of people would argue, and I agree, that the NHL has not recovered from that season all the way in the early to mid-90s, and I think they kind of lost this window. The other thing they did, and this is a side note, is they expanded by like 10 teams and completely watered down the talent pool.
They were like, oh, so all of our fans are in Canada and like cold American states. You know what? We should go to Phoenix. In Atlanta.
Yeah.
Let's put three teams in Florida, a team in Phoenix, a team in Atlanta, a team in Nashville. I mean, it was just a
Columbus
blunder. Yeah. I mean, apparently with the Blue Jackets.
Yeah, a team in Columbus?
People fucking love the Blue Jackets. Yeah. Yeah. They're actually popular. But anyway, that's kind of a side note. I still think the NHL needs to contract by about four teams. But
or move them all to Canada.
Yeah. But right after that, which, by the way, the Atlanta Thrashers were on the right track. They moved the Thrashers back to Winnipeg to be the Jets. Right after that happened, there was a new style of hockey that came out called the left wing lock that the New Jersey Devils perfected. And the Devils went on to win a bunch of Stanley Cups using this style. And it was just like holding the shit out of people and hoping you wouldn't get called. And it was just like it was just this horrible like neutral zone trap style of hockey.
I never knew you were so into hockey.
Boring. It was so boring. It was the worst, and it made hockey unwatchable. And I actually stopped watching hockey in the early 2000s because it was just so boring. And like now, I'm kind of getting back into it, but I can't still like jump into it wholeheartedly. And anyway, that whole style really caught on, and it just made hockey unwatchable. It was so boring, and you ended up feeling that same anger that Matt's talking about with the Spurs for like the New Jersey Devils and like all these adherents of this defensive style.
The late 90s UFC era, basically, where
everyone's just grabbing each other's geese.
Oh, we figured out how to wrestle, and now we just like lay on each other.
Yeah.
That's how you win the points.
Yep. All right, so another question. Ahoy, Fropmates. So I recently had an argument. Reed, my girlfriend, yelled at me on my use of pornography. We have been dating for almost 2 years, and throughout this time, I have not attempted to hide the fact that I watch porn and have been reasonably open about it. If the subject is broached, I speak freely and truthfully. Then last night, she has an emotional breakdown that I watch it. She calls me gross and a pig and an objectifier of women and says that it's basically me cheating on her. I responded seemingly rationally, saying that is really not that crucial of a facet in my life, and I would have no issue ceasing all porn use, and above all, it's really just a stress relief. She says that it does not matter and can't get over it. So my question is this: how does porn affect your current or previous relationships, and do you have any insight into my situation? I suppose my first mistake was being so open about it, and I always kind of thought porn and masturbation in general went hand in hand with being comfortable with my body and sexuality. I understand and acknowledge that it does objectify women and sets unrealistic sexual goals in a way, but I suppose I saw it as a victimless crime. For the record, I would say I watch it about 3 or 4 times a week. Thanks, Mike.
Oh,
Tim,
my gosh.
Jr.
Dude, if you're only watching porn 3 or 4 times a week, that ain't even bad.
Let's let Matt have the first crack at this one.
Honestly, like 3 or 4 times a week, like that's not even bad. Like that's so I honestly, it's hard because like think of porn as Pandora's box. Like all the things that it's bad, we know that it objectifies women. We know that it's not realistic, or at least we should know these things, that like that's not a realistic portrayal of sex, and you shouldn't expect threesomes or anal sex just because you happen to watch it on whatever site is your jack-off site of choosing. But I think that, you know, it's a reality that unfortunately women who want to be in relationships are going to have to grasp that like this is the reality, and like it's available, and so men are going to choose that when they want to jack off because they can. And I'm not saying that's good or that it's right, but it's something that's there and is going to be made use of. And like I as an open-minded male, I don't want the answer to be, well, like tough shit to be the answer, but like you kind of have to accept the reality that you're facing. Otherwise, you're going to be as a woman, you'll be in for a lot of disappointment because that's going to be the reality.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, it's hard to put myself in the shoes of someone who's dating someone who's not cool with porn and might be super cool in other ways. But I think that's a situation that probably requires some tough love, where you say, look, you can either have a guy who watches porn and enjoys it, or you can have a liar, or you can have like a weird religious sort of weirdo that's probably going to have a million other problems. So you have like you have a few choices, and I think I'm your best one in this situation. Also, about the objectification thing, like, yeah, does porn objectify women? Sure. I think we all objectify each other like about a million times a day. So like be nice to each other. But I don't think...
Have you bought a product recently?
Yeah, like we all
You're supporting sweatshop labor.
Yeah.
I mean, like, again, like if it's not – if porn happened to go away, like then what I'm going to be jerking off to is a person that I saw on the subway who I will just objectify anyway.
That's like, what sex is.
And so I don't like this whole thing. If you think of, it's not just porn is cheating. Like the attitude is like masturbation is cheating. And if that's the case, then you're just not being open-minded about sexuality.
And well, it's about a lot more than, you know, she's just the, objectification of women is a false flag that she's standing behind. It's, You know,
yeah, what's she angry about?
She has a pro- yeah. There's
well, she's trying to assume that men have the same sexual attraction process as women, which they right. don't.
Yeah, no. Like, I don't need to know anybody's name in order to have sex with them. Also, I just like that's like as a man, I'm just like a horrible, horrible animal. With
you might
no,
not even have a face in this fantasy.
Yeah.
I wish we had Matt Lieb here to weigh in on his decision making processes.
The other thing, didn't he say that they were dating for 2 years and she was cool with it, and now she has a problem?
Yeah.
That's where you need to be like, whoa, let's step back.
Well, but so
what's this really about?
You need to find the underlying issue because the reality is masturbation is a very normal, healthy thing. Mm-hmm. And it's whether it's like cutting
good
out.
Good for the woman.
Well, whether it's cutting out quote unquote pornography, like what is she worried or concerned about? Because if she basically makes him stop masturbating, there's going to be other issues with the relationship where. Like that's a dude's got to do that, and if you
make him stop masturbating, he's gonna strangle you to death,
or he's gonna hook up with other women. Like there's not a lot of in between.
It's an outlet that makes the man like into a decent human being. Like after masturbating, you can go out in the world and not be angry or aggressive. You can be like, all right, I feel. Like I can actually be a useful member of society.
I feel like that's how you solve the war on terror. You just like sneak porn to everybody and like they start beating off. They're like, oh, I don't want to blow myself up anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So listen, don't cut out the porn, bro. I couldn't imagine cutting it out completely. That I would never agree to such things.
Nah. Hey,
you guys want to, you might get weird.
Uh-oh. Here comes Brett. Here comes Brett on the train.
When Brett prefaces his weirdness, you know it's going to be bad.
I've been off the sauce for like a month.
Go ahead.
Well, that's it. It's you. Like I was just trying to reset, you know, because it changes your. Like I don't want to be judgmental because obviously that's something we all use from time to time. But like it definitely changes how your brain works and like how your patterns work. Like it can definitely adjust what your schedule looks like chemically.
Yeah. Know? With jizz? Like,
yeah.
It wipes it out. Whites out your appointments.
You know, with the goji berries.
Goji berries. Goji.
Yeah, but the weird thing is, like, apparently to get clean for... Like, it's like a purge where you just don't drink for a while.
Yeah, like the hell is that thing called? A cleanse, but it actually has an effect on something.
Yeah, well, it's not. There's no magical toxins not being released. Like it's just a mental discipline thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of have to not think about it at all.
No thanks.
Yeah, which is difficult.
Listen, to wrap the subject up, like there's something deeper at play in their relationship. That if it was cool for 2 years and then it suddenly wasn't. She was either holding something back in a big way for a very long time, or she has reason to be suspicious/jealous or something clicked in her where the trust issues that were there before are no longer. So there's like it's not necessarily the porn. Like the porn is it's a symptom of something else, of a different problem.
Well, as Brendan said, false flag. There's definitely something else where the porn is something that's easy for her to point to that said that's the problem when there's something else going on because the spoiler alert, dudes jerked off before pornography on the internet. I know that's hard to believe by all you youngins out there, but it's true.
And there might be some that don't, but you don't want to date them. I promise.
If there's dudes that don't even masturbate at all, they're serial killers.
Basically,
fact,
yes.
Fact.
Yeah. All right, this one's a short one. Hey, frat seniors, the first person on the subject of masturbation, the first person I jacked off to was a 13-year-old girl because we were classmates. It seems okay if we were both 13, but when I ran into this girl at a Thanksgiving party back home and said, hey, you were the first person I jacked off to.
No,
she looked weirded out. Yes, you should never say that. I assume she had mistakenly thought I meant this happened recently, so I clarified... No.
Yeah, that's what.
Oh, yeah, definitely explain more. Get some more words in there.
Hey, I did it when you were 13.
No, like it was a long time ago when you were a 7th grader. The explanation didn't help. She left. Later that night, I ran into my first crush. Years ago, I told her I was her distant relative from an alien planet in an attempt to woo her. Now she has a deaf toddler, and I'm clearly just as charming.
This guy got some next level game, dog.
Hey, you don't tell people that you thought about them while Matt.
Yeah, almost ever. There's really no. Almost ever.
No, that's not.
Did you flag this most recent one?
Well, the herpes one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oop. I thought that was interesting.
Don't step on it.
Whoa. Well, it comes out pretty early. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm gonna read it. All right.
Yeah.
Frauder Pops. I'm reading this blind, so this is like a sight read in music, so, you know.
All right.
I have a relationship question that I can't figure out, and due to the subject matter, I can't ask any friends for advice. So
you can only come here.
I started dating this girl about 3 months ago. She's great. I like her a lot. We enjoy each other's company, etc., etc. About 2 weeks ago, she drops a bomb on me, and the bomb is this. She went to the doctor to get new birth control and got an STD screening while she was there. No pregnancy. Yay! But turns out she has herpes. Boo. The genital kind. Boo! Now, we have always used condoms when having sex, but I was still nervous, obviously. She was very upset and worried I would freak out on her. I was very calm. I told her I'm not a monster, and I know she didn't know she had it, so I can't be mad at her, and she thanked me for understanding. I immediately got tested, and the test came back negative. I'm herpes-free. So my problem is this. I like this girl, but we've only been dating, known each other for a few months. I don't know how serious our relationship is going to get. It's not too late to just bail. Except A, I do like her, and B, I'd feel like and probably be an asshole for saying I don't want to date her just because she has an STD. But it does constantly gnaw at the back of my mind. I would really rather not have genital herpes. What if we break up a year or so down the line for whatever reason, and then in the meantime I do catch it? We just haven't been together long enough for me to be able to say, oh, no big deal, she's definitely the one, so a condom is enough to make me not worry at all because I don't think we will ever break up. What do you guys think? Any experience with a problem like this? Obviously, this is some personal stuff, so do any of you know, quote, a friend of a friend who had a problem like this? Thanks.
All right, I'm just going to jump on this just because having written the KSK Sex and Fantasy Football mailbag for the last couple of years, I've gotten a couple of these herpes questions before. And because I don't want to sound like a fucking idiot when I answer the question, I've done this research before. So the best way that this has ever been put to me is by Drew McGarry, who we all know and love and follow on Twitter and all that shit. But he was like, think of a woman with herpes as like a great, like, you know, the discount sports car, like a slightly used sports car. It's like people were like really admire that, like don't know that there's a little bit something wrong with it. And from my understanding, herpes is mostly communicable within the first year that it's contracted. After that, the quality of Valtrex and associated drugs is so good that it really minimizes how much it can be transmitted and when it can be transmitted. So your actual chances of getting herpes from someone with herpes, as long as you're being responsible and not having sex when they're symptomatic or on the couple days before they're symptomatic, when the virus is what's called shedding. So there's a very narrow window. Like you're only susceptible to getting herpes from like when they have an outbreak or just before they have an outbreak, and that's incredibly rare after the first year of their infection. So, long story short, like just keep dating her. Like it's totally fine. Just be responsible.
Just put that pussy under magnifying glasses and make sure there's no herpes on it.
Very educated answer. I like it.
That's what I've done for my research. If anybody else has anything to add, you know, your own personal stories, that's what I've done from my reading. Again, I'm not a doctor, I'm not an expert, but that's what I've gotten from my occasional trips to the CDC to answer CDC.org, not the actual CDC in CCI.gov, rather, not the actual CDC in Atlanta. But
you actually have to go down to the headquarters.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, look, you got like zombie herpes. It's gonna be bad.
So what I'd say is
gonna firebomb you.
So what I'd say is like educate yourself, look up what you can. But I think that it's really not that big of a deal. Like, listen, dude, there are something like let's see, estimates are that 776,000 people in the United States get new herpes infections every year. basically, in another generation, everyone's going to have herpes anyway, so you might as well just, like, date someone awesome.
Yeah, wait till she has a kid. That kid's probably going to have herpes anyway. Then you date her.
Here's the way STDs work. STDs work like this. Either it's curable and you don't need to worry about it, or it's incurable and everyone will have it in 10 years. So
there you go.
Hey, real talk.
Yeah, and like, again, like, honestly, like, give this chick thumbs up for being, like, it must be so hard to come forward and be like, I have this gross thing about me that could turn you off and make me lose you forever. But what she did was come forth and say that. That's like a brave, cool thing. Yeah. And a sign that you've got a cool person. So I would say, if you like her, stick with it, and then just, like, you know, play your condoms.
Oh, yeah. He found the soundboard.
Yeah, well.
I would have a tough time with it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, of course you would.
I'd be thinking about it all the time.
Yeah, well, don't think about it.
Well, that's what Vince told me about getting chopped open.
Well, there's really no other solution.
It's so easy.
I'm not saying it's easy, but there's really no other option. All right. Well, I have to pee really bad. Do you guys have anything to add before?
Well,
we put
we're
this
going on about
bed?
2 hours anyway, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this will be my last broadcast for probably a month or two. So these dudes will hold it down. Yeah.
Got the surgery next Wednesday.
Yeah, big surgery next Wednesday. If you want to know what I'm having, look up RPLND, and you'll see. It's called a full fillet. It's a nice big incision, about 10-inch incision down the front of my body. So
retroperitoneal lymph node dissection.
There you go. He's a quick internet searcher. Vince said, "Don't think about it," and that was not an easy option. Thank you, though. I realize
it's not an easy option.
All right, Vince, you're going to get a 10 to 12 inch incision down the front of your body.
Okay.
Now, here's what I want you to do. Don't think about that.
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, I'm pretty good at not thinking about stuff.
Okay, fair enough. You are good at that.
Well, listen. At least you're not a Christian, so it's not ruining your Christmas season.
Very good point. That's
right.
Fair.
When does Hanukkah end?
Hanukkah's almost over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Where's your menorah, dude? This is bullshit.
You got to enjoy your full Hanukkah. You're not missing out on Christmas. Like, it's the best time for the surgery.
Oh, it's going to be wonderful. It's a wonderful time of year.
Well, why don't I pass on some wisdom to you, Ben? So last time Justin Halpern was in town, Vince and I went and got some food with him, and I said, hey, why don't we get some beers? And he said, I can't drink. And I asked him, why not? And he said, I just had heart surgery. Turned out he actually had a pretty serious heart problem. And, you know, of course, his dad was a physician. And so I said, well, what did your dad say? And he said, as long as your brain and pecker work, you're okay. So I would pass the same advice on to you.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's wait till everything's done, but everything should be working. Brain shouldn't be affected. Pecker, well, you know, it should work fine.
Well, be well, Ben, and I'm sure I echo the thoughts of all Frogcast listeners when I say good luck to you, sir, and we're all on your side.
Thanks, everybody.
Dude, you're raising so much awareness right now. Like,
isn't that what Leslie Nielsen said in Airplane?
What?
Good luck, and we're all on your side. And then he keeps coming in.
That would be amazing if I just unconsciously was quoting Leslie Nielsen.
Not a bad way to
20th anniversary of Naked Gun happened a few days ago. But
Don't call me Shirley.
Still one of my favorite movies of all time.
One of the best. Also, thanks to everybody. The Whoop Dreams trailer.
That was terrific. 10,000 really
views in like a day or two, which is crazy.
Yeah. That's a lot of eyeballs.
Yeah. Like about 6 hours after I posted it, someone from South by Southwest emailed us to be like, hey, are you guys going to be finished with this? What's going on?
It may delay. Crazy. It may delay the release to all of you find people that paid us a couple bucks. We'll see. We'll see. It might. That's all.
Well, we'll cross the bridge when he actually finishes cutting the whole movie. But, you know.
Yeah. We'll know more in a month or two about release dates and things like that.
Yeah. But yeah, like, everybody was surprised at how good the footage looked, as were we, because, yeah, this guy's...
It would be pretty fun to go to South By.
Those guys can shoot a mean scene with their slow-mo and all that. Like, they got so much good slow-mo stuff. I don't know if it's going to cut into a movie, but, man, it looked goddamn good. It
looks beautiful.
Yeah. All right, guys. Brendan, you want to take us on out of here?
Yeah. Well, thanks, everyone, coming on. Matt, thanks, as always.
Thank you.
Anything you want to pump?
Nah, man. If people either know me or they don't, and if they don't, that's totally cool.
All right. I like that philosophy, man. I like how you roll.
Goj Bears.
Goj Bears. he's this is a man who can get down with some rays.
Cacao nibbies.
Yeah, I'll just be over here. Pomegranglers. Yeah.
Pomegranglers.
The Pomegranglers.
Shout out to my Pomegranglers.
Some dankberries.
Damn it, Pomegranglers. What'd you do with my arugula?
They really should have dankberries.
All right. Oh,
Pomegranglers just on your couch carving everything you own into a bong.
Fucking stop it, Pomegranglers. That's my Little League trophy. Damn it, Pomegranglers.
All
that's
right.
That's my CPAP machine.
That's an aggressive change from pomegranate to pomegranglers.
Yeah.
So good.
Oh, that was really good, though.
Pomegranglers.
That's some word jitsu.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, as always. Everybody, thanks for emailing in. The email's frotcast@gmail.com. Vince, what's the Google voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right. Well, until next week, good night and good chins.